Love Talk Radio.
Hi there, beautiful listeners. I am love, I am loving, I am lovable, and so are you. Thank you for joining me. This is Jude Albright, your host, and I welcome you to Love Your Addiction. Yes, I did say love your addiction. Most people certainly don't love their addictions. Rather, they fight them, feel powerless over them, become sad at their effects, and struggle to release them. Loving your addictions is being grateful for how they have shown you who you are not, so you can now remember who you really are, and that is pure magnificence. What if addiction is not about what you do, but rather about who you are refusing to be? Who you are denying yourself and the world. I am here today to offer you another possibility. What if you could see addictions through different eyes, loving eyes? Many of us have forgotten that we are love, that we were created by a loving creator. I'm going to call it Father, Mother, God. I'm going to call that Father, Mother, Creator, God, but there are many names for it, like Source, All That Is, Supreme Being, Universe, Higher Power. Many have also forgotten that we are creators, too. Why have we created addictions? Well, I believe they're a magnificent tool for learning. Here in this third dimensional world, we've chosen to learn to experience life through polarities, like hot and cold, night and day, male and female. I believe that we're all looking for love, mainly because of our loss of our connection to our source, our God. Often we look for this love from our families, and we don't get it, because they can't give us what they don't have. This leaves a mark on us as children, and we start thinking that there's something wrong with us. I know for certain there is nothing wrong with any of us. My intention for today is that you open your hearts wide open, and accept that you are good enough, important enough, and smart enough to live the life of your dreams. And I really don't think anyone has dreamed of becoming the best addict. Loving your addictions is being grateful for how they have shown you who you are not, so you can now remember who you really are. Pure magnificence. Today we are going to be looking at AA. Have you ever wondered how AA works? So many people have misperceptions about AA and what it really is. Some people, my parents for example, think it's a cult. Others believe it to be addiction treatment. Art S. joins us today to reveal truths about AA. He has been in the program for over 37 years. Please join us with your questions. If you have specific questions or comments, please call in at 516-453-9371, and we'll address them. Or you can go into our chat room, which you will find online on our Love Your Addiction Blog Talk Radio page. COVID-19 has changed our world. There have been many losses, and the earth will never be quite the same. What will it be like? Well, that's up to each one of us, individually and collectively. How are you handling the changes? What are you doing to comfort you? Have you been trying to control your feelings by drinking, smoking pot, or controlling others? We are offering suggestions, so please call in with your thoughts. 516-453-9371. We're all dying to the old so the new can come in. Let's look at what we can do. Forgive, forgive, and more forgiveness works. You can cry about it, complain about it, be upset about it. But for your own sanity, please learn about AA. Let me tell you a little bit about our guest today. His name is Art S., and he has been active in AA for 37 years, and he's willing to share his experiences with us. He is the perfect person to explain what AA really is. As an extremely caring individual, and he really is, Art is also a certified social worker and has sponsored many individuals in the program. He currently volunteers in hospice and helps homeless people by providing food for them. Art, would you please say hello to the audience?
Hello, audience. I'm Art.
Okay, I'm going to start out by asking Art what AA really means to him.
Okay. Well, to me, AA is a way of life. It's sort of guidelines, a fence around what I can do and be safe and what I should not be doing. I've been in AA not over 37 years. I'm coming up on my 37th anniversary in another couple of weeks. I got 36 years and about 10 and a half months, actually. It's close enough. And I live by the principles and the steps of AA, not necessarily consciously, but they've become a part of who I am. I don't intend to ever hurt anyone, and I just try to live a calm, normal life. I'm very active in AA. I chair meetings on a weekly basis. I usually chair a Saturday meeting at my home group. And for the most part, I try to come up with a topic that deals with a higher power or one of the parts of the program that we sometimes struggle with. And as I say, it's coming up on 37 years since my last drink. And it's a way of life that keeps me out of trouble, gives me lots and lots of friends, and it's, you know, just something that I enjoy doing, and it's helped me. And if you have any other questions, you can feel free to ask.
What were you like when you were drinking? What kind of a person were you?
Okay, I would say for the most part, I was a bit self-centered.
Okay.
I would say, you know, for the most part, it's what I want to do, and then I'll try to somehow connive to make that happen.
Okay.
And I know how to do that. But if I wanted a drink, I mean, I could tell you stories galore about going to a wedding and having my wife, well, I had two wives, one wife, you know, they're both dead now, said, I don't want you to drink when we get to my sister's house. You embarrass me. Or don't drink at the wedding. You embarrass me. I said, okay, I won't. And I do anyway. Not because I'm, you know, being a misfit or something like that. I just want to drink. Drinking was a way of life. And I never did anything bad, but I certainly did a lot of things that were stupid. Well,
can you think of one stupid thing that you did?
Okay, I can think of dozens of them, but I mean, for one, racing in a car from one county to the next because the bars closed an hour later, and then ramming on a parkway on Long Island into the back of a car that's doing the speed limit. In the aftermath of that, I wound up with a fractured vertebrae in my back, thrown out of the car onto the pavement, and lots of trouble. My parents had to come to the hospital somewhere around 2:30 in the morning to see me.
Oh.
I'm sure they liked that phone call that they got.
I'm sure they did.
I've had others where I fell off the pier when I was in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba with the Navy. I was in a drinking contest. Maybe you don't know what that's like, to see who can stand the longest while they're drinking. And I wound up, guys carrying me back to my boat. I was on a tugboat. And putting me in the wrong bunk, and I threw up in another guy's bunk. That's not a smart idea.
No.
So, I mean, these are some of the examples of the stupidity that alcohol can cause, at least for me. Now, other people might fall asleep from it, I don't know, but I do stupid things. And I'm the first to admit it. So, you know.
But while you were drinking, you were not the first to admit it, right?
Oh, far from it. I would always say, I can handle this. I know what I'm doing. And part of my thing was always to try to get up to a certain level of buzz in my head from drinking, and always far exceeding it.
Okay.
And, you know, that's a part of it. But, you know, there's so many facets to it all. You know, it's taken me a lot of years to, you know, to live them and, you know, hopefully learn better from them.
So somebody who only drinks beer and thinks that he or she is drinking because it tastes good, and that person would never think that they're an alcoholic, what would you say to them to help them realize that they probably are an alcoholic?
Okay. I would say one of the first things to look for in someone is if you drink beyond what you thought you were going to drink. And, you know, I'll just tell you a little about myself. I'm of German descent, and Germany is noted for what? The Oktoberfest. And what's that all about? That's all about drinking a lot of beer.
Mm-hmm.
And to think that beer is just a lightweight drink, that's not true. There's plenty of this. You know, if you drink enough of it, you're going to fall down on your face. I've done it. And, you know, but that's just the way it is. It's an alcoholic beverage. It has a lower percentage than whiskey or rum or, you know, any, or, and I never cared for wine, but wine also. But there's plenty in there, and you can drink beer all night, and I can be a witness to having done that, which I could tell you later. And drinking from 8 o'clock at night till 2 o'clock in the morning, and then arguing with my wife that I'm in good shape to drive home.
Okay.
And convincing her that she could never find her way home from where we were, she said, okay. And actually doing it. And if you want to know a little bit more about that particular story, this was the night of my last drink, which I call my, that my sobriety date, which was August 31st, 1984. And I will just tell you briefly, after my wife agreed that I could drive because she wouldn't be able to find the way home, and I told her if she drives, I'll probably fall asleep. So she could be lost in the woods. This was country roads. You know, no street lights, no signs, no nothing but trees on both sides. Maybe you recognize a gas station here and there. So in any case, we were upstate New York in a town called East Durham, which is known as Irish Town or the Irish Alps. And as we were driving home after I have a belly full of beer, between my father and I, we put away 8 pitchers of beer between 8 o'clock at night and 2 o'clock in the morning. That's a lot of beer.
That's a very lot of beer.
And driving back, and I felt in perfect control, but I know I was. But I would never pass a sobriety test, for sure. In any case, I saw the flashing lights ahead, and I knew what that was. This was Friday night of Labor Day weekend, and that's a DUI checkpoint waiting for me about a half a mile ahead. I made a deal with God, a foxhole prayer, if you will. I said, God, if you get me through this, I won't drink again. I drove up to the where the troopers were, and in my Volkswagen bus was my wife and I in the front seat, and my mother and father in the back seat. I rolled down the window. Trooper looked in, shined the flashlights at us, and said, "Go ahead."
Yeah.
Oh my God. What did he just say? Go ahead. I thought for sure it was going to be a night in jail up in the Catskill Mountains. But in any case, as I'm driving across the Rip Van Winkle Bridge, the thought came to me, how the hell am I going to not drink for the rest of my life? I was 46 years old then. I'm 82 now. I'll be 83 in another 2 weeks or less. And that's a long time. But I said it, and I've done it. I have not picked up a drop of alcohol since that first night. Ask me how I did it. I've done it through the AA program. And if somebody says, well, how does the AA program work? My first remark would be, it works very well.
Okay.
And you may have other questions, and if you want to call in on the number that Jude gave you, you could gladly ask.
The number is 516-453-9371.
9371. Okay. Call that number and you can talk to me, or if you call later, I'll be gone. But I'm doing this a lot of years. I've been in AA for ages, and I've been on cruise ships. I've been on 31 cruises, and every cruise ship that I've been on has had a Friends of Bill W. meeting. Bill W. was Bill Wilson, one of the founders of AA, and he is alive and well on cruise ships. You can take it from me that there's plenty of drinking that goes on cruises.
Oh, definitely.
And we have our own meeting, and it's nice because you meet people from all over the country. Then you run into them. Okay, I don't know what that was all about, but it's a squeak that came through the microphone. So anyway, I was at a meeting, an AA meeting in New Mexico, and I've been in many different states on vacations at meetings, and you'll immediately have friends, people who've experienced the same thing, the hangovers in the morning, the fights with your wife, or if you're a woman, maybe the arguments with your husband. Bosses not being too happy when you don't show up at work, and try to explain that away. So, and I've had all of these experiences, and I'm still here, and I worked, and I did fine. I owned my own business in later years and ran that successfully, but sober.
But I would like to also interject that everyone has their own experience. And not all people who would be considered alcoholics have hangovers or feel miserable the day after they've been drinking.
Well, this is true. I did a master's thesis on alcohol treatment, and I have at home an encyclopedia of alcoholism, and I got to say it's probably close to 3 inches thick. And it talks about all different forms and degrees of alcoholism. And there are people who may stay drunk from Monday through Friday and then not drink on the weekend. There may be people who stay sober all week and get bombed on the weekend.
Yes.
There's plenty of that. And a lot of different degrees in between. I have a friend who worked in a Ford manufacturing plant up near Niagara Falls, New York. And he didn't drink all week. It came the weekend, he would get home, get relaxed in his house, and drink until he passed out.
I was married to one of those.
Okay. So there are all different degrees of alcoholism. And not everybody wakes up with a hangover. And it's another thing about alcohol. Alcoholism or the intake of alcohol, and that is tolerance. Your body builds up a tolerance to where you can hold a belly full of beer and still feel fine and wake up okay the next morning. On my last drink, which was the August 31st of 1984 drink, I woke up not in a really agreeable mood, but I woke up and had to go out and mow my lawn, hungover. But I did it. And anything else that you want to ask, you know, you could ask Jude and she'll pass it on to me.
Well, what I would, I think people would really like to know how AA works and how AA helped you stop drinking.
Okay, for one thing, for me, AA, I said before, it works very well. But AA works on the basis of 12 steps where we admit that we're powerless over alcohol, and then we come to believe that there's a power greater than ourselves that could help us. And there's 12 of them all together. And I live by those steps. They're guidelines for my life, how I want to live, and keep me out of trouble. And that's about all that I can. You know, it works very well if you work it. You know, you can't just sit in the meeting and twiddle your thumbs or look at your phone and hope that that's going to do something for you. It's not. You have to take this program seriously, and it will help you. It'll help you stop drinking.
Yeah, and you really have to have the intention that you want to stop drinking.
I had the mandate to stop drinking from that battlefield or foxhole prayer to God to get me through this DUI checkpoint. And I did not want to go back on that. If I said I'm not going to drink, I could drink. In the beginning, what helped me was just the fact there were a room full of people, a smoke-filled room, I could add. And my thought was, if these guys are not drinking, I don't have to drink. I can do the same thing. And I did. That carried me for a while until I got further into the steps where I could ask my higher power for help to resist temptation. And I have had temptation for sure and resisted it. And I can tell you one brief one. I was a few months sober and I had a printing business on Long Island. And I told my wife, you go home and I'll pick up a pizza on the way home. I was coming out of the pizzeria, which was across the street from my print shop, and I ran into a friend of mine, and he had a shopping bag with 6 packs or 12 packs of beer. He said, oh, great. Why don't you come with me and we'll go over to another guy's house. I had two other friends, all whose wives threw them out of the house for their drinking. And so I told my wife that I'll be home. So I just give her a call, tell her you met me. I said, that's the last thing I could do. I wouldn't have a home to come home to. So I just told him I can't do it. And I went home, and I told him I ran into my friend Greg. He said, oh, I'm glad you're not with him anymore. So I met him. says, well, you know, he's a loser when his wife threw him out. I says, yeah, that happened. And my other friend, Bob, and the third guy in that group was a guy named, I forget his name now, but he was a Scotsman. And his wife didn't care. They both drank. So his was like a safe house. You could get drunk at his house and nothing will happen. But in any case, that's, you know, part of my story, part of my 36 years plus, almost 37. And, you know, it's how I live my life today. I think I live a pretty good life. Thank you.
So for anybody who is afraid to go to their first AA meeting, what would you say to them?
There is nothing to, there's nothing to be afraid of. You don't have to go in and announce yourself. You don't have to say a word. If you're looking for AA, you can go online. There's no phone books anymore. Just look up Alcoholics Anonymous and intergroup for the area that you're in. And they're all over the country. And find one that's close enough to you or far enough away from you that you're afraid of being seen. But remember, anybody that you see there is there for the same reason you're there. And,
good point.
And there's a reason we call ourselves Alcoholics Anonymous is that we don't talk about who we saw. I can say I was there, but I can't say I saw you. So you are safe. And, you know, that's all I can say. You know, anything else that you have that you'd like to ask about that?
We're very close to our closing, so what message would you like to give anybody who's listening, any loved one of somebody who is an addict?
Okay. The message I would give is that by now, if you really are a heavy drinker or an addict, I was not an addict, I was a drinker, I'm sure you've heard stories from your spouse, complaints, you better do this, or I'm going to leave, or, you know. And there is an answer. The answer is Alcoholics Anonymous. You can stop, and you can stay stopped for a very long time. I've done it myself, and I have lots of friends who've done it. A typical meeting that I go to has around 25 people, and we're all sober. And you have nothing to fear. Nobody's going to call on you and say, get up and tell us about yourself. That doesn't happen.
Okay. Thank you very much, Art.
So I ask you, what if being addicted is not about what you do, but rather about who you are refusing to be? What can you now be to create your healthy, loving lifestyle and be that lover for the addict whom you love? You can find more answers and you can reach me, Jude Albright, at www.beingrecovered.net. What is truth? The sight of truth awakens and stirs us. The voice of truth repeatedly echoes awareness in us. The smell of truth sweetly comforts us. The taste of truth refreshingly nourishes us, and the feeling of truth warmly embraces us. Please remind yourself to stay wrapped in your truth and your love, remembering the true, magnificent, powerful, beautiful you. And here are some questions for you. What if you stopped validating other people's realities? What if you lost your capacity to judge and blame? What if today you became grateful for new opportunities? Do you think your life might be more joyful? Everything that you have done to make you wrong, will you now destroy and uncreate it and step into the love that you truly are? This is Jude Albright, and I send you love and a day full of aliveness. Stay beautiful and remember that you are a creator. Bye for now.